Fred Willard played dunderheaded characters who matched ardent sincerity.
Speaking of dunderheaded characters, Guillermo Mash here, welcoming you to the season 3 premiere of Imagining Community, focusing on police brutality and how the hell we can solve this or make some big strides. And you are indeed listening to FM 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio, Sacramento Valley, Foothills, and beyond. And always remember, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or the underwriters. Want a big announcement? There is a rally for justice for people of color going on right now. Right now, that's like this second. Chico Downtown Plaza across from the Muni Building. If you can get on down, you should. And as Stephen Marquardt would say, show up. Show up for racial justice. Showing up for racial justice. Go out on Facebook, too, and look up Justice for Desmond. They got a GoFundMe campaign going on. And while you're out there, you know, on your social media, you know, try to find out the details on another rally that's going on Friday. Big shout out to all the people out in the streets making their voices heard. And real quick, I produced 2 one-hour shows this week on Black Lives Taken at the Hands of the Police. Yesterday, I aired a segment on surviving family members' experiences for loved ones killed at the hands of the police with my story, Scott Rushing's story, and Christina Arquiga, ending with how to be an ally to people of color and families of police murder victims with local community organizers. Ellie Mendez Knight, who's out there right now. I heard her voice. It's always nice to hear Ellie Mendez's voice. And Stephen Marquardt. Tonight's Imagining Community Hour is dedicated to Butte County people of color, sharing their lived experiences and insights on being black in a predominantly white, rural, racist community. With David Phillips, we have David Phillips, the father of Desmond Phillips, who was shot dead in his home by Chico police on a mental health wellness check in March of 2017. And joining the conversation is Corey Himpump, a local spoken word maestro and voice for the unheard. And we end the show with John Lapine, a Butte College English lecturer who grew up in Michigan in a mixed-race family and moved to Butte County in August 2018. The cancellation of Tuesday's rally allowed me an amazing, you'll hear it soon, amazing experience to record a raw, mostly fly-on-the-wall role capturing David Phillips and Corey Himpump conversing on being a person of color in rural Butte County at Bethel AME, outside Bethel AME. Just an amazing backdrop. And many of the ways their life experience has been jolted in these times here on People Power Radio.
So, yeah, you know, I'm just doing the same thing I've been doing.
You know. Yeah, man, it's been a whirlwind, dude. Fucking last 4 years, goddamn. Every year it's another something. Oh, somebody getting murdered.
Yeah. And then they ask you about, you know, how you feel about that brother, George Floyd. Of course, you know, we're hurt and we're saddened. But we're used to that. That's like every day, you know, everyday news now. You know, I mean,
it's like that moment we've been sitting around telling people, man, police brutality, they're killing us, they murdering, yeah. They not getting held accountable. And then it's like you're just talking into the abyss. And now all of a sudden when they finally see something, now everybody's trying to get involved or whatever. And I'm just hoping that they stay involved, you know what I mean? Because now it's trendy.
Yeah.
Trendy to post up the black picture and all that stuff. But when it's all starts dying down and it becomes time to start attending meetings with Justice for Desmond crew and attending, you know what I mean, city councils, wherever you're at and things like that, and continue to keep your foot on the neck of the oppressor, where are these people going to be at? Because they're not affected, you know what I mean? Because exactly. I know you know how we feel. It's like exactly. we to our boiling point. We already was so upset and frustrated and feeling, you know, violated. And then you put this on top of that,
yeah.
And there ain't much room in that cup, boy. You know, they're going to overflow if something don't change for the better, man. They need to put some drainage on this thing, because I'm one of the most peaceful people that I know, and I'm feeling the anger. So I know people who get upset with me for how I try to keep it peaceful because of my understanding of how that creates a growth in the dialogue and creates inclusivity. Those people, they was already upset. And so now you put this on top of that, and you got a lot of people that's ready to do action. And so they better give us an opportunity to do action for good, because action is going to be done.
You know, I was just listening to a piece from Governor Newsom, man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really take my hat off to this man, because he's really feeling it. he's owning up to it, and that's a good thing. We finally got someone, you know what I mean? I don't feel that he's just saying that just to say it. The man is really feeling us, you know what I mean? And just like these threats we got right now, how do you feel about that? You know, exactly what we've been talking about and what we're protesting against, and the NAACP over here, which was a big disgrace. You know what I mean? How are you going to march with the police? How are you going to take photos with the police? And we're sitting here protesting about police violence. You know what I'm saying? Police brutality. And they're killing us.
Yeah.
And they're murdering us. And, you know, and I'm with the ACLU as well. They are very, very disappointing to me in the northern chapter here in Butte County. I'm speaking of Butte County, nothing else but Butte County. NAACP of Butte County and ACLU. They're a disappointment, and they're not representing the people. That's my opinion. You know, that's my opinion.
Yeah, because we're out here, and we're trying to get change. And it's like, when do you go into a negotiation and give all the leverage to the person you're negotiating with? Our leverage is being able to say what we need to say, not give them a voice in our space. We need to take our space and say, hey, this is what we demand. This is what we are not going to settle for less than. And when you complete and start showing activity towards gaining leverage in that direction, then we'll hear out what you have to say. But we've already heard what you have to say, and we've already given you opportunity to change
for 400 years.
For 400, on top of since Desmond was murdered, and there's been nothing done about it. If there ain't nothing done about that, there's nothing done about the Rushing murder. There's nothing done about the Phillips murder. Then there should be no police hugs and pictures and all that, exactly, because it's not real.
It isn't. It isn't. And it just goes to show you the little power that the DA has here in this county. Mm-hmm. Being here 30 years, he has everybody bought. He has even pastors bought here in Butte County. Mm-hmm. He has, like I said, NAACP as well as ACLU. But we have nobody. If the NAACP, if we're supposed to turn to them for help, we have nobody. We don't have no help from the police, the cops. We have no help from NAACP. We have no help from ACLU. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to sit here and just continue to allow this, allow this, allow this. I understand the people's frustration. I don't, you know, I don't agree with the looting and none of that. But see, my thing is, if you're going to loot and you're that angry, go to their neighborhood, up their neighborhood, go to their house, you know, and they'll get the picture. And I bet you something will start happening. When you go to their house, you go, you know, you go to the DA's house, go to the governor's house or whoever you need to go to and start rioting over there. And who riding in their hood? They don't care about us tearing up our hood. Mm-hmm. They give less than a heck.
I'll push back a little bit on that because I feel I'm with you in the sense that looting and rioting, it can be counterproductive largely. But what I have noticed is we've been protesting a long time, and we ain't never got this kind of response.
Right.
So that rioting did wake up a lot of voices, and it did bring a lot of people into the conversation. As much as I don't approve of vandalization and all that, and as much as there's, you know, agitators from, you know, KKK and Proud Boys and all these and police out there starting these riots as well.
Exactly.
So there's, I mean, it's really a nuanced situation. But the one thing that I do have realized that has kind of opened my eyes a little bit is that rioting has been more effective than our peaceful protests.
It has. But my thing is, I just didn't want it to be like a repeat of Rodney King, that you're tearing up our black businesses, our brown businesses, and, you know, this and that.
Rebuild it.
Exactly. So my thing is, I'm with you on that. It did. And it has impacted, and it has woken some people up. You know what I mean? But again, and if it happens again, I'm just praying that the people go in their neighborhood.
Don't hurt ourselves.
Again, don't hurt ourselves. And start spending your money in the ghetto. Yeah. Start spending your money with black-owned or Latino-owned or Chinese or whatever it is. Start spending your money in the hood. That's how we're going to grow.
That's the only
You know, that's how we're going to grow.
It's holding us down is because they've been spending their money with each other.
Oh, yeah.
Since they've been stealing it from us. Exactly. You know, since the 400 years ago, 1619, when they stole us and they had us working, stealing our labor, murdering our families, all that epigenetic pain is still there. And that
quick public announcement. Yeah, folks that could get down to the rally, and there's a lot of people out there, loving people, wonderful people, you know, rallying for justice. Chico News and Review, go on their Facebook page. They're doing a live audio video right now.
That's what a lot of these riots is coming from, too. These kids, they don't even understand the anger and the anguish inside of them, but that's where it's coming from. It's coming from the DNA of their great-great-grandparents who were beat and murdered and had their testicles chopped off and were separated from their families and so many other just despicable, disgusting things. That's still in the mind and in the hearts of the people who live today, and we've done nothing to rectify it. And black folks have been saying for years, hey, man, we need to figure out some kind of reparations, and as soon as people hear that word, it gets to clenching their purses. Oh, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. But we are benefiting from that. And if you aren't willing to even have the conversation, then you're going to continue to deal with the side effects of the disease that is the pain of racism and systematic racism.
I agree. I totally agree. I agree all the way.
What were some of the demands, Corey? What comes to mind when you talk about demands?
Of us, that we want to stop being murdered by the people who are supposed to protect us. That is the first and foremost demand. Absolutely. Police are not judges or executioners. They are servants of us. They are not allowed to kill us unless we are attacking them with deadly force. And when you see time and time again with people with the lighter complexion waving swords, killing multiple people and still being able to be apprehended without deadly force. But then you see a black man who bounced a check for $20 get murdered in the street. And this is unacceptable. That is our number one demand. We will not stand for continuing to be murdered by police. We promise you we will not. We will not. That is the number one demand. There are several others like use of excessive force, you know,
accountability,
sure. Firing officers that murder us
and convict them,
convicting them
to the fullest,
arrest them and convict them. Don't just say, oh, he's got a paid leave, like the officer in up north in Northern California who posted the video of George Floyd being murdered with some kind of joke about a man sitting on his head. That's a police officer that's getting paid to protect us. And instead of immediately just firing him, they put him on paid administrative leave, likely until no one is looking, and they bring him back into the fold. This is unacceptable. And these are part of our demands, is hold these police accountable or we will.
Exactly. Because they done pushed us to the point, man, our back's against the wall. Mm-hmm. I worry about my family every day. Right here in Chico, I worry about my daughter. They trail her, follow her, intimidate, all that bullshit. And I worry about my grandkids. You know, I got grandkids that won't even come. The ones that were there the night Desmond was murdered, they will not step foot in that house. You know, it's too much trauma. And how does that make me feel as a grandparent? But I'm still in the house, and I'm going to stay there until everything is, you know, the investigation, all that. But my point is this. When you kill someone, you don't know how you traumatize these little kids. You know what I mean? And then they grow up with that, you know, and it's building up in them and growing up in them, and then they see it over and over and over. And we got to start from the top. From the president on down, and flush out the whole goddamn system, the FBI, the government, all of that. We need to just flush it out because, like I said, it's right now the cops got the message that, and they got orders to go out and kill us, believe that. But they got the message that I can go out here and I'm going to smoke this guy, and shit, I ain't worried about it. You know what I mean? You can report it to your sergeant, and he don't do shit, report it to the lieutenant. He don't do shit, go on up until you get it to the right people. And then these guys talking about, oh, I'm a good cop. Well, goddamn it, start being a good cop. Just like they got a nation, a group of hate cops that hate and racist cops, you can get a group of good cops that can fight them suckers just as, and have a better chance of clearing and cleaning them out than we do. You know, I'm a good cop. Don't just sit there and say, don't talk about it, be about it. Because we're dying every day. Every day.
Yeah, man. It's the police. And another huge factor here, which has been illustrated by the recent events of George Floyd, is the inactivity of citizens. You know, everybody's getting involved now lightly with the pictures and the memes and the Facebook and the Instagram and the Twitter and all that. But the activity in physical bodies, if all these people that are posting these pictures actually go down to their county, county supervisors and say, this is what we want, it's getting done. And so that's what we need, is these people to not block your racist cousin, uncle, or whoever, schoolmate from high school. You need to be friends with them. You need to go be friendly with them and express to them in ways that's persuasive, to get the hell out of these ideals. You know, people with the conditioning for police immunity. You know, the people who say no matter what the police do is probably justified. Those people need to be talked to. The people who say, oh, those people are animals because they haven't been around people that are from different backgrounds than them. So you need to embrace those people as best you can and help educate them, because by ostracizing them, they're only getting stronger in their echo chamber of lies and BS ideas. So we need to break into those echo chambers, especially white people. They will listen to white people more than they will listen to people of other complexions, because they're not used to dealing with people from other complexions. And so when they see a person from their same background, they're more willing to be open-minded to the ideas. But
people of all color, get on down Plaza right now. Chico News and Review, thanks so much for doing a live broadcast of that on your Facebook page. Youth for Justice made possible generous contributions, Keys of Arts supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your local state partner, California Arts Council. Since 2011, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit Friends of the Art. And by Four Bay Aquatic Center in Oroville, just minutes from Chico, will be opening June 5th with rentals of kayaks, stand-up paddle boats, and more. Hours are Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, 10 a.m., 7 p.m. Weekly youth aquatic camps and monthly sailing classes for all ages are also available. Visit Four Bay Aquatic Center for details to sign up. And every day is a fun day at the Four Bay. Getting back to this interview with David Phillips and Corey Hempump here on People About Radio.
But it's not easy. It's been going on for 400 years, and there's been millions of people working at this. And so if you just now get involved, don't expect it to be a light switch flip. This is something that we're working on for generations past us.
Exactly. I was just getting ready to say that. We don't want you just to be mad now. We want you for the long run. We're talking years later. You know what I mean? I know you're upset now, but are you going to be there for the long run? You know, are you going to be here a year or so fighting this? Hopefully we'll have something changed by then, but I'm just saying, are you here for the long run? You know, I appreciate everybody. And like you said, man, it took this for people to start listening, for people to start rioting across the country. But are you going to continue? Are the cops just going to wait it out till we get tired? You know what I mean? And let it die down. You know, let's get a mayor in this city or mayor in that city. Let's go out there, say something kind, make some promises, calm them down, and then you can go back to your office type of shit. You know what I mean? We want something done. You know, we want something done because, again, our back's against the wall, you know. And it ain't only black people. It ain't only, the majority, you know, but brown people, but they're killing white people too at an alarming rate. So it's to the point they're sick thinking, in which they're in a group. It's going to affect you, the white people, you, me, everybody else. You know, it's going to be like a police state or a police group or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying it's getting to the point where it's already there. Nobody's safe. Nobody's safe.
I think another important thing when we're talking about this racial disparities here, because people look at the numbers, but they're looking at them in like these vacuums. And so you hear numbers like, actually, the percentage of people killed by police is more white people than black people. And that is actually true. It's about 44% white and 42% black. But when you do the further math from that and you recognize that blacks only make up 14% of the nation and whites make up about 60% of the nation, then you see that the disparity is large. That should be troubling no matter what race you are. You shouldn't be like, oh, well, you guys are blowing this out of proportion. You're not getting killed that much. Any person being killed by the police is too many. And if you don't feel that way, it's because you've been conditioned. That's a fact. And you should look into that condition. We've all been conditioned. I have my, you know, anti-homophobic conditioning from being raised in a black Christian family, and that's something I had to deal with and continue to deal with. I have my womanizing conditioning that I have to continue to deal with. We all have these things, but it's about if you're willing to be humble and self-investigate. And that's what we need as much as anything right now, is for us to all be humble and look into ourselves as like, what are my flaws? Where am I looking at things wrong? What did I hear when I was growing up, or what happened to me when I was growing up that has caused me to have a skewed perception that I can adjust to benefit my ability to live a good life and the world's ability to live a good life?
Makes me want to slip this in and for a talking point is my mom years ago, and I think I've said this on air. She says to me, she says, you know, Billy, everyone knows that black people commit far more crimes. And I said, how do you know that, Mom? Oh, Billy, all you have to do is turn on the TV.
Oh,
what would you guys say to that?
Turn on the TV, and the way they put us out there is true. You know, for her, I'm not saying true that it's true. I'm saying for her to believe that, to turn on the TV. It's just like that Jesus Christ. They got him painted as some white man. You know what I'm saying? That's holier than, you know what I mean? I don't know what color Jesus was. Do you?
Hey, he was burnt copper. They say he was burnt copper with hair of wool, whatever you want to call that.
But my thing is, what I'm trying to say is, the way I've grown up, I'm 61 years old right now, and I've always, I've grew up like the white man is the superior person. You know what I mean? It's white firemen, white policemen, white teachers. You know, it was like everything white, and it was like, to me, growing up, especially here in this racist town, you had to walk, you know, and stay in your boundaries. You had to. You would always get in fights growing up from elementary up, but it would be something racial all the time. You know, it would be a racial. I've been stopped in this town when I was in high school. I had a white girlfriend that pulled over, and the only reason I was pulled over, the officer asked her, "Are you okay?" I'm 61 now. That happened when I was like 15, here in Butte County. You know, it's been racist like this for a while now, and it's still here, and it's stronger, especially under the leadership of Ramsey. And that's real talk.
So, in regards to the media, now let's start the other way. In regards to black folks committing more crimes, I believe that's possibly true. But what people don't look into with that aspect is it's because they were forced into communities that they then ravished of all their resources when they took all the manufacturing jobs out of the Bay Area and out of LA and forced all the black folks to live on one side of the freeway and encouraged all the white folks to live on the other side of the freeway and gave them loans and didn't give the black folks loans. This is how you created Los Angeles and Philadelphia and Detroit and Chicago, all the places that we know as ghettos. Those were all red line districts where blacks were forced to live and not given proper opportunities for jobs, healthcare, or any other resources. And that's what creates. So whether they had been black, white, Mexican, aliens, whatever they had been, had you put them in those circumstances, they're going to commit crime at a higher rate than the people who you give all the resources and you give all the loans and you do all the other things that you're supposed to do to be humane. And so for the point about the media, I feel like they give us what they know triggers us. And so they know that there's a large section of America that are triggered by black danger. You know, by fear of the black body. So they over-sexualize us and they animalize us to turn us into super predators that are taking their women and these type of things. And the media has been a sidekick in these narratives, in portraying these narratives from back with Reefer Madness when they criminalized weed by saying that it was causing black jazz players to take white women and brutalize them. to all the way to present day, where they show you riots and two blocks down, there's a peaceful protest with seven times the people. And so this is what the media does, is they create narratives that they know. My thing is, people like to blame the media, but they are the culprits. They're selling you what you're asking for. So it's the majority of our country that's asking for this vicious narrative against poor people, homeless people, people of color, and anybody of other. And they sit there and beg for it and have these ideals, but then point the finger at the media when it's really us. We point the finger at the 1%. It's us. You know, we keep us oppressed. We the ones that say, oh, don't feed the homeless. Don't give these people houses because I have to work for mine. And it's like, that's why you have to work for yours, because you're not willing to think outside the box and create an environment where more of us have resources and power to where the few of them can't hold us down.
What's it like to be a person of color in a rural county like this, where it's predominantly white?
I came out here from Los Angeles, South Central, man. And it was a really violent time in South Central when I left, about 95, early 90s. And I was so conditioned from that environment with the bars on the window and everything. I moved to an area called California Park, real ritzy area of Chico, because the prices in the ghetto are the same prices as California Park. But that's a whole nother story. So I remember being spooked when my first night in California Park. I was never scared when I lived in the most dangerous city in the world at the time, or in the country. But when I moved to California Park, I was scared because we didn't have bars on the windows. I remember that. And then I saw a post that was talking about how Chico originally had what they called, I'm forgetting the phrase, but it's basically nighttime segregation, where you people of color weren't allowed to be in the streets of Chico after dark.
Sundown town, I think.
I think that is it. Yeah. I think you hit it on the head. And so I found that interesting, because I came in way after that was supposed to be abolished, and the energy was so remnant, I didn't have to be told anything about it. I felt it. So places like Paradise, Magalia, Concow, Cohasset, all these little outskirt mountain areas, I always had this feeling subconsciously of, I better not get caught out here, or something of that nature, just because I was black. It was inherently in me. And
all right, just listeners joining, I just want you to let you know that is Corey Hempump you're listening to. It's a local spoken word maestro and a voice of the unheard. And he's having a conversation, just a raw, just free-flowing conversation with David Phillips, the father of Desmond Phillips, who was shot dead in his home by Chico police on a mental health wellness check March of 2017. And appropriate venue to do this interview was outside of Bethel, AME.
The other thing is, being in a predominantly white community, sometimes it can be really depressing. It can be depressing because they don't understand, largely. There's always, for lack of a better terminology, you got your progressives and liberals, and you got your conservatives. And so you got your liberals and progressives, and they mean well, but they still don't understand. And sometimes they're not willing to be informed. That's frustrating. And then you have the other side, where they're just like aggressively rude and disrespectful, and that is even more frustrating. So it's just frustrating to be out here. But you know, it's also a privilege, you know, because then I get the benefits of being around people with privilege that they can then bestow upon me. And I have benefited from many folks granting me the favor of their white privilege.
I've been having a lot of wonderful sound bites asking people for a message of hope. Corey, why don't you give the listeners a message of hope as best you can in these times?
That's always my stance. And that's what's been most troubling about this last week plus, is I'm struggling to find that. I struggle for better of us, but if I'm honest, I'm concerned with the possibility of it. And so, you know, I don't know that I have anything hopeful to say today. I don't know that I do. I don't. I am so affected right now. that I can't even give you a hopeful phrase, man. I am affected. I am affected. I am upset. I am saddened. I am speechless, man. I don't know what to say because I am so deeply affected by the clarity that has been arisen from the situation. So now we're all clear that of what's going on. And then there's still this large swath of resistance of people who just don't see humanity in certain people and value structures of oppression over humanity. They rather hold in place things that need to be readjusted for their benefit because they don't recognize that they're disadvantaging themselves. And after doing years of work and trying to educate people in that field, the discouragement is starting to creep because the conditioning is so thick with some of these people. And it's like, you can't just cut them off the planet or cut them off the country or whatever. We have to all work together. And I just don't, I'm not sure how we're going to do that because some people don't want to work together. A decent segment of the country doesn't want to work with the other segment of the country. And that's not just racist people either. There's other people who see the racists and they don't want to work with them. They're like, oh, you're racist, so you should die. And I'm on the side of, we all got flaws. We all got some nasty stuff inside. Some of us, it shows a little bit more than others. But the only cure for it is to address it. You know, you can't just ostracize people and expect that to be the cure. But at this point, I'm having trouble seeing the puzzle pieces fit together.
We're ending on, as best you can in these crazy moments, you know, a message of hope, if you have one.
A message of hope is that we accomplished something as far as these people starting to hold these cops accountable, or, you know what I mean? I hope that we can come to peace. I hope that we can come, I hope that we can just stop the killings and stop the murders and stop the racism. That's my hope. My hope is that we can live as people like we're supposed to. That's my hope.
My hope would be that, you know, people can gather together and just see each other as human beings and talk to one another. I really do feel blessed to be kind of like almost like a fly on the wall just listening to you two and seeing your facial expressions and how hurt you are and how passionate you are. And it's made a huge impact on me. I think I got a little tear in my eye.
Yeah,
just hearing what you folks have to say.
I still love. I'm hurting. I'm in pain, and I've been. And this is before my son.
Yeah.
But I still love. You know what I mean? I refuse. I refuse to let.
This is my favorite
something
part of
change me. You know, like I refuse to let them change me, change my heart, change my mind, change my thinking of love, peace, and I love you, brother. I love you, brother. You feel me? I love that person driving that car. People need to get back to the days back. You remember back in the day when it was all peace and love, back in the hippie days, and everybody, man, you could walk in a person's house and just sit down and make something. Everybody loved everybody back then. We need that back. We do, man, because everybody's brainwashed and the hatred is so damn hard to hate, I would think. It's so miserable. Let me put it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me put it like that. It's not hard. It's miserable. A lot of people that are racist right now, they're miserable. And they were taught from their parents on up, you know, and they're miserable. Some are changing and saying, hey, you know what? I don't want this racism no more. I don't want this hate no more, you know. I heard they had a revival in Marysville, a tent, one of those tent revivals. And they had young white men with swastikas on the side of their head coming and asking God for forgiveness, asking for change. That's what we need. You know, that's what we need. That's what we really need. And we as parents and as grown-ups, we got to get the game right. We got to step it up for our children. You know, we got to. We got to do it right. We got to be the role models for these kids. We got to be, you know, really a positive role model for these kids now. And I'm talking about all kids. You know what I mean? Back, you know, too, and I know you can identify, you too. back in the day in the neighborhood, you do something, shit, your neighbor will tear your ass up. You know what I'm, yeah. And so, yeah, that, my hope is that we can just love again and just, you know, live in peace. That's what I want. And don't have to worry about our babies, you know, or worried about our loved ones being shot or murdered, going to the store to get some ice cream or something, or, you know, tail light out or something, or just simply being out, you know. But, yeah, I just hope that we can get these police and the government all on board, flushed out, cleaned out, and let's just live, man. Try to live and get along. That's all. That's my hope.
In that regard, I have a hope. I'm not hopeful at the moment, but I do have hopes and dreams and wishes. And I hope that, like, just before I came over here, you know, Allie, one of the community leaders, she had made a post.
She's at the plaza
and
right now.
Somebody that was supposed to be an ally was actually on the post disrespecting her and calling her names because we had canceled the protest and he didn't understand. And a lot of people think it was out of cowardice or we were scared or something like that, opposed to it's actual chess. This is chess out here. This ain't checkers and it's real life chess. You can't just be going straight forward and jump falling for any old dummy move. But why I bring that up is because I hope that, you know, people who join the allyship can be solid allies, man, because the allies on the other side, they ain't playing. They down for the cause no matter what. They watching people get murdered and they still down for Trump or whoever. You know what I mean? They down for their cause. And so we need the people, if you join in our allyship, we need you to come with a pure heart and some real desire to be a part of unity and not 700 generals and chiefs. You know, we got chiefs that been on the ground. If you wasn't on the ground last year, you ain't a chief. You know, you need to find somebody who've been doing this for 2-3 years more, like the Reigns, the David Phillips, you know, the Allies, and the list goes on, the Leslie Johnsons. And when you join those movements, trust these people know what they're doing. None of the people who have been on the ground dealing with racial discrimination in Butte County and Chico that are part of the Justice for Desmond Phillips movement are cowards in the slightest. We've been out here by ourselves for years. We are trying to protect the people who are just joining, who may not know to stay calm when someone comes to provoke them off. We understood that we didn't have the time to be able to educate everyone that was going to show up or create an environment where we could be sure that people who come to support us aren't tricked into doing something that's going to end up tarnishing years of work that have been being done by activists in the community. That's the real reason. The reason. So to clarify again, for anyone who was wondering why the rally for today, Tuesday, was canceled, it was because there was threats from people who were claiming that they were going to cause conflict. And what we need is to get our message out without giving the police department or any other detractors excuses of how we started something, because that's how it goes. We get people, racist people, coming to our rallies and attacking us. It's happened. I seen it with my own eyes, downtown Chico, people pulling up in their cars and attacking us. And then we get blamed as if we were out there causing a commotion. And so with that experience, we didn't throw the rally today. We're going to prepare, continue to make moves, continue to put pressure on our local government to improve. And hopefully you'll be on board.
Just like you said, chess and checkers, we're being smart. Not going to fall for their bull. And so they can come and give me a case, give this man or anybody on the team a case. You know, the police, they start shit. They send people in to disrupt stuff. That gives them a door. So they can come in and get physical. And see, we're smart enough not to fall for that. And that's that. And again, we're winning right now. We canceled that little the city council, but we're winning. We're still getting our message across, right. You know, and we're fighting it the way we're supposed to fight it. Not in no physical altercations, none of that. We're fighting it. And we're going to get them in court by and things
rules.
Like that.
Fighting
exactly.
By their rules.
And it's going to be heard because they've, like, again, they've done it so much to where it's got to be heard. It's being heard, you know. So, yeah, we're being smart. And that was very well said, Corey.
I appreciate you, David. Yes, man, sir. David has been such inspiration for me, man. When everything happened with Desmond and everything, man, it was so relative for me being a young black man. We almost look similar as well. So it was just, it really just hit home right there, man. And ever since then, my life has never been the same. And I appreciate you for the example that you've been setting of strength.
I appreciate all you and all other people that came to us. You know, you as well. I appreciate y'all. You come to us, man, because I was lost. I didn't have nobody. Rain been there since day one, you know. And with her knowing her connections, which got me connections, and that's what got it started. When this man spoke at the first event we had right after Desmond was murdered, and the poem that he put together, it was so, it gives me chills right now today, you know. But I love this man for that. I love everybody that came in, you know, and showed the love, because I was like, there is no love. The cops just, you know, they just murdered my child. And I can't go to them. I can't go to the NAACP. You know, I had nobody except for my brothers and sisters and activists in the community. And God sent me some hell of a soldiers. You guys are hell of a soldiers as well. And I appreciate you. The Phillips family appreciate you.
Yeah, we'd like to thank you, Guillermo, and KZFR. Yeah. For being, and you know, CNR, some of the reporters over there, for being our outlet, because some of these other local medias are just in the pocket of the local government, man, and it's kind of rough. Yeah. So we totally appreciate you guys for helping us get our sound, our voices out there as well.
This man did talk shows with us, the Justice for Desmond team, when nobody else would give us the time of day. And yeah.
You know, it makes me remember a quote from Rivera's son about 5 years ago. She used to come to Chico every year, and we were talking about radio. I was pretty new at KZFR. And she says, I love radio because it's like getting a college degree without going to college. And it's really a beautiful thing, and I really respect it. I really feel honored because Corey had said, I feel honored to, you know, be interviewed. But I'm like, I feel equally honored because, you know, I'm able to call you two up and just have this wonderful conversation. Yeah, yeah. And it's really lifted me up, and I feel like I know so much more, and I'm so much more connected with your struggles and you as human beings. I'm more connected with you too right now, right here, right now, as human beings than I was when I came in here, and I know you too really, really well. You know? Well, so I just appreciate this forum to do this, but probably the best thing to ask before we close is, we've covered a lot of ground, but, I mean, is there something that was on your heart that we may not have said or discussed already?
Actually, no, not mine that I can think of. We did cover quite a bit of stuff, but I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, man, we pretty much got it off the top of my head. I'm sure once I jump in the car and get around the corner, I'll be like, oh, dang, I should have said bye-bye.
Yeah.
But, you know, just a clarification on the realities of the situations of, you know, how they try to classify groups like BLM as some kind of Soros makeup thing or whatever. No, this BLM is just like Antifa. It's people who believe that black people are being oppressed. Not that black lives should matter more than others, but that they should be valued at a higher rate than they're being valued currently. Mm-hmm. And so that people would hope that people understand that. And I hope that people would understand that, you know, like not just BLM, but all the people who are protesting. People say, people equivalate protesters to rioters, and they're not the same thing, you know. So especially in Chico, because that was a large part of what happened this week, is a lot of the people were treating protesters like rioters. That was what these threats were coming in as they were protecting the community from rioters when it was nothing but peaceful protesters. So I would hope this interview would help clarify, and I would hope the people listening to this interview can get out the message to those that they know in their communities that may not be as aware that protesters against police brutality are in their best favor.
Listeners just joining us, Corey Hempup's spoken word maestro, and also speaking with David Phillips at the Bethel AME. And right now, right here, Peace for Desmond by Corey Hempup, 2017. Peep About Radio.
So much pain, so much hate. While so many die, when others look away, I'ma share peace and create space. Let's share peace and create space. So many arguing what's not the truth, and they never even truly knew It would be silly, too, if it didn't cost so many based on the hue of the skin they ain't even get a chance to choose. Advancement of the youth damaged by the rules. Not a roadblock, but a broken branch of clues. A few construe and use while the average confused. Lose hope and use dope. I climbed out and grew soul. Negro spiritual dream flow. A vat of that. We might not make it to the mountaintop, but we see the gleam, no. With a clean coat in the mean snow, I've grown a hardened shell from a darkened trail to dance with Gargamel and come back and tell his secrets. The reasons? I'll be clear. As possible and logical, some obstacles take lots of skull, the skill and will of patience. Painted faintly across the cross of ink, this kind of thankless we bear when making changes where there's no complaining. Maybe that's why we keep complaining. Or could it be the shaming, gunning down a man you was paid to protect because you wasn't trained enough to contain him? And that's before explaining what part racial persuasion plays in the fear of Caucasian government agents. American conditioning goes both ways, and too many of us is afraid to say this. So many in the U.S. are unwilling to see it. So scared they're gonna lose what they never knew they had, they couldn't believe it. Meaner to protesters and speakers than killers in the street are. A favorite change of topic when you ask how accountable police are. Emotions are inevitable. But what's a solution deferred? Or the value of an objective obscured for the pleasure of letting them know an opinion of their worth they can pretend they never heard? Thoughts to observe? Most seeds are for sure. But what thoughts will you encourage with your deeds, time, and words is where we are the cure. Take deep breaths, speak with open minds and hearts. Cease thoughts. Be smart. We are the cure.
All right, Guillermo Mash here on Tuesday, June 2nd for a pre-record with John Lapine. And I met John Lapine, like a year or so ago, talking about people with lived experiences, people of color and trans remembrance and, you know, gay rights. It was Stonewall, I think it was for a Stonewall weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That was August it would have been, yeah.
August it would have been, but John is someone that I was able to interview and connect with at a couple of events after that. And John has a really powerful way with words, which is good because John teaches journalism and he's an English major. And I am drawn to interview John Lapine, who's going to introduce himself better than me, I hope, here in a second. But he's had some really powerful, you know, raw kind of Facebook wall. John's Facebook wall is just what's on his mind, what's on his heart, and he has just a beautiful way of distilling it down to what we need to know. So welcome to KZFR, John Lapine, and give us a little intro on who John Lapine is and what you got to share.
Yeah, so I grew up in Michigan, and I moved to Chico. It'll be 2 years in August. So I grew up in rural Michigan, and I am mixed race, so my dad is black. Was black, and my mom's white. I grew up actually not knowing him. I grew up with my mom for the first few years of my life, and then she married my stepdad with two kids, and we've known each other since I was probably like two or three when they met. So I've known him for my entire life. So I grew up as kind of a literal black sheep in my family, as a mixed race, kind of visibly brown person. In rural Michigan, my hometown, the city that I graduated from, with my high school, was 91% white, 95% white, so not very diverse at all. You know, often I would be very, very, very many times the only black person in my class, or the only, I shouldn't say person of color, but definitely the only black person in my class, or like in an event, you know, in a bar, right? The only black person in the bar. I'd say, you know, from my high school experience growing up, I would say, throughout my high school years, there were probably three or four black people that went through the whole school. From like when I was a freshman, everyone like who was a senior up from me. And when I was a senior, all the freshmen and sophomores below me, probably one of three or four. And two of them were not from the area originally. They were actually from New Jersey, I believe. And so I have kind of a really interesting, I guess, perspective on race and racism and the way that it kind of works and the way that I kind of see it manifested. Because I did not grow up part of black culture, you know. I grew up very much, I would say, part of white culture with an entire white family in a very predominantly white area.
What kind of, for the lack of a better term, what racial intolerance were you subject to growing up as a kid? You know, we interviewed David Phillips. He talked about, he said, you know, any fight I was in was because of race, you know. Was your situation similar, or what was your situation, John?
So most of it, it's an interesting way that I've kind of experienced racism, because it's entirely based on skin color. It's not really based on like the culture that I come from, because I come from the same culture of the people who I went to elementary school with and went to high school with. And so any like racism that I experienced, or, you know, those little like racist jokes, you know, any even like minor things, it's kind of all based on skin color, you know? And so I got to see what people kind of expected Black people are supposed to do. And then when I didn't fit that, they would say, well, you don't really talk like you're a Black person, or you don't really do this like a Black person. You don't really act like a Black person, or whatever, which is ridiculous, because everything that I do is like a Black person. So the racism and the, you know, the, even like racist little jokes, not like serious discrimination or anything, a lot of it comes from entirely just the view of skin color.
No, it does. So it seems, in summary, you were not subject to any kind of violent altercation because you were Black in Michigan, or
I wouldn't say so, no. And I am mixed race, and so I do have the privilege of being lighter skinned, and I think that does have an effect. You know, it's a privilege to be light skinned and not a dark skinned Black person in America. I'm probably in the world, right?
Well, exactly, because in a way that I couldn't, and it's kind of fun that I didn't have time to do all the prep and kind of look and go, I know I interviewed you. I don't remember exactly the show, but I'm kind of looking back going, I don't remember the pronouns. And I'm like, gosh, I don't remember exactly, you know, what he defined himself as a person of color because of your skin tone, right? Mm. So that really hits home for me, that comment that you made right there. So thank you for your lived experience. You know, this show that we're airing, as folks are hearing, we really want to land on the experience of a person of color. And right now, the experience, real reason I really wanted to pull John into this conversation tonight was his experience as a person of color, you know, sharing his thoughts around the media coverage and what the hell is going on.
Yeah. So I've been watching a lot of news from kind of a lot of different sources. Some of it is live streams, like through Facebook. You can turn on your phone on Facebook and you can record whatever is happening. So like live streams from protesters. I've been watching like local news channels from kind of across the U.S. They get streamed on YouTube and Facebook like that. I would say over the last 3 or 4 days, I probably consumed, I don't know, 40 or 50, maybe 60 hours of media. And I guess what I haven't done is watch a lot of like mainstream media, like TV media. But I've watched a lot of like kind of boots on the ground work that people are doing and live streaming kind of from the side of the protesters.
Citizen journalism. Yeah.
Which I absolutely appreciate. You know, I think that's invaluable. I think it's really hard to justify not witnessing this event. You know, I think it's really hard to look away. And I also think that it's really important that we do witness this and consider like what it actually means. I think it's easy to look at the protests and think, you know, step A, a person was murdered. Step two, there are protests. Step three, there are riots, and that's bad. And that's really just like the tip of the iceberg as far as the order of events. You know, everything in history kind of builds on itself, and this is kind of the latest two or three dominoes in a line of 800 dominoes.
John's on his Facebook wall right now pulling up some of this historical. In a way, you've made some historical context about what you've seen, John, and you know, share some of your insights.
So one thing I think it's important to do as a educated person reading the news and consuming the news is look at the language that is used, or look at the language that reporters use. For example, saying a sentence like protesters were shot with tear gas, or protesters were shot with a rubber bullet, it kind of begs the question, who shot them, right? Shot by whom? So it's important to kind of notice things like that when they pop up in things like headlines and in news broadcasts. And this is like a, you know, I don't want to say this is like it's a left-wing thing or a right-wing thing. It's something that all sides do when they're covering events. It's a little bit careless as far as journalism goes to use what's called the passive voice to say something was happening rather than saying a person did something. So like saying, right, oh, they were shot with tear gas versus saying police shot them with tear gas. Right, because it kind of absolves responsibility from who did it. Right, we want to know who done it, right. and if you're writing and you're saying they were shot with rubber bullets, then it takes the police kind of out of the equation in a situation like that specifically.
I would say it's shoddy journalism because they're out there to document is in the most terse, concise way possible what the hell happened. And, you know, putting, you know, people were tear gassed is not very good journalism. I mean, even being too judgmental, but.
Right. And that, you know, it feels like such a little thing. It feels like we're arguing semantics. We're just arguing word choice or something like that. And I would say it's a little bit deeper than that.
Oh, it is a lot deeper.
And I think it's really easy to hear one criticism of media and say, well, then all media is bad. And I don't think that that's true either. I think that journalism is really important, especially right now, especially in the last 6 days or 8 days or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to consume news. And I also think it's important to be critical of the news that you are consuming. Something really interesting happened to me, actually, the other day. I get some of my news from Twitter because there are people who post kind of live to Twitter, posting photos and videos and things like that. And there was a hashtag that popped up under trending, which means a lot of people are talking about it. And it was probably a few thousand tweets about it for a DC blackout. And so I clicked on it and I saw a few reports of apparently there had been a blackout overnight, that there had been no tweets at all from protesters from like 1 a.m. to 7 a.m. in DC, which is concerning, and reports that people were not being able to get in touch with their loved ones. And then that blew up and it was like 4 a.m., I would say, had about 300,000 tweets with this hashtag. And it turned out that it was not true, obviously, that had not really happened. And so it seems to be part of some disinformation campaign, right, that is happening on social media. You know, I think it's important to pay attention to that kind of stuff. But I also think it's important in that same breath to pay attention to the real stuff, too, right? You have to be, as a consumer of media, you have to be discerning. You have to be able to do that. You have to be willing to do that too. You can't just say all media is fake, everything's fake news, I don't listen to it, because that's I don't think that is true.
For the folks just joining, we are speaking with a Butte County College professor, instructor. What is your title, John?
Instructor, instructor of English.
Instructor, John Lapine, instructor of English at Butte College, and we're looking through his Facebook wall. John's done a really kind of amazing job, John. Just kind of telling people what you've seen and kind of sharing your views of what's unfolding. But you've got one here that says white privilege doesn't exist. Black people are killed, unarmed and peaceful protesters are tear gassed in our streets while Kyle walks around with a rifle at an anti-racism protest. But go off, sis.
Yeah, so something that I've seen recently, like in Philadelphia, for example, it's a city that is very segregated. There's districts that are predominantly black and there's districts that are predominantly white. And I've seen tweets from residents of Philly who are talking about the groups of men, mostly white, carrying baseball bats and kind of seem to be enforcing vigilante justice or, you know, I don't know if they'll actually do it, but, you know, it's certainly menacing. Right, to walking around with golf clubs. And then you see the disconnect with, you know, police shooting tear gas into peaceful protests. And then these guys in Fishtown in part of Philly who are walking around with baseball bats in broad daylight and they were protected by the cops. You know, I think we saw that with Charlottesville a few years ago. Same kind of, I would say, mentality, right? Same kind of power structures are at play in a situation like that.
Maybe a good way to close, because I've been having a lot of wonderful comments around this prompt the last 3 weeks or so. But as a person of color living through this yet again, another brutal murder at the hands of the police, what kind of hope do you see, you know, with everything that's unfolded and where we are right now here on Tuesday, June 2nd?
So I think it's really easy to say, like, racism will die away. I think it's really easy to say it's an older person thing. Old racist people will die and then things will be better. And we've seen that is not true, right?
No.
Mm-hmm. We see that people who are racist will sometimes raise racist people, or maybe I should say people who are raised in a racist system will perpetuate racism, right? Maybe not be a racist, but still do things that do perpetuate the system of racism. But we've seen more people speaking out against it this week than ever before. And I think that gives me hope. You know, it's not a thing that's going to die off with generations. It's not a thing where the old people will die off and then all of a sudden racism is gone. Right.
Mm-hmm.
These protests, I think, are showing that people realize that. I think these protests are showing that there's more support than ever. You know, there's more evidence than ever that this is something that's disproportionate, that this is racism, that it's happening.
It is racism, right? Yeah.
And that we are paying for it. You know, we're funding the police. and so we're kind of paying for it literally with our money. And now I think people are waking up, and I think more people are just understanding it.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to